Hey, thanks for dropping by. Come on in.
Time to retire to the drawing room.
Okay, put the kids to bed. It's going to be adult time in the drawing room. It's a little bit steamy. Not that much, though. Teenage kids, I think, are welcome. In fact, I think that might be the point of one of my guests' latest projects. I'm joined by so much star power in the drawing room today that you need to be an astronomer to cope, frankly. Two luminaries of the literary world. One has written 30 novels. Count them. I don't even know if she is anymore because it's just ridiculous. Once you're counting them in dozens, I think you can stop counting. Anyway, all of those books have appeared on the New York Times bestseller list. Between the two of us, we have sold 500 million copies. That's half a billion. This is like, if that were a country, it would be one of the economic powerhouses of the world. She's got a new book out. It's called Confessions of a Wild Child. It's a child that you've met before, although not as a child. So this is something of a prequel, I suppose, a bit of a backstory to a character that's well known, that you probably know very well and love, much like the author, a woman by the name of Jackie Collins. Thank you so much for joining us in the drawing
room. My pleasure to be here.
I'm glad that you're upholding your end of the bargain in our mutual book-selling arrangement.
How many of those were yours?
That's not important now, but half a billion.
I know, but I've been doing it forever. I've been doing it for years and years and years and never been out of print. So each book has dozens and dozens and dozens of different reincarnations.
Okay, so this is just making me feel far worse now. And I don't know if it's making my other guests feel worse, although she shouldn't, because with her it's not so much quantity that matters as uncompromising quality. She wins literary prizes pretty much like you and I have meals, and she's recently won the Miles Franklin. Anna Funder is her name. She's, of course, Australian, but she never spends any time here. So we're glad to grab her while she's in town. Thank you for coming in.
It's a pleasure.
500 million?
I know. That's just knocking me out. I'm a bit speechless, actually.
How long would you have to write? I didn't know there were 500 million books sold. Like, in the history of...
Oh, my God. It is crazy because, you know, I was expelled from school at 15. Everybody said, you cannot be a writer. You've got to, you know, have degrees. You've got to go to college. You've got to do this. You've got to do that. You're a school dropout. Forget about it. And I have a message for everybody, which is follow your dream. I followed my dream because I always wanted to write. And I was writing since I was, you know, 6, 7 years old.
Is that why you keep doing it? I mean, you proved your point.
I really have.
Do you have to keep going?
I love keeping going. My passion is to wake up in the morning and have nothing else to do except write. And I'm not a literary writer. I am a storyteller, and I'm proud to be a storyteller. And I'm very much in awe of Anna, who is a literary writer, but also a storyteller.
I hope.
Yeah.
I try.
Do you feel the same way? Is it your dream as well, Anna? Is this the common thing amongst writers? The perfect day is where you've got nothing to do but write.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it absolutely is. I think it's a kind of, you're a bit driven. I mean, if you weren't driven to do it, there are a lot more sensible things you could do with your life.
There's a difference between being driven and kind of having no option. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, at a certain point, not really. I mean, I don't have any option anymore, so I have to get the words down. If you don't do it, you don't feel that you've kind of existed that day, you know?
You must know how many people want to do it. I mean, you must know too, Anna. Everybody says, oh, I want to write a book. Oh, I'm going to write a book one day. Oh, I can do that. They can't do it. It's not that easy, you know, to write a book and to have a beginning and a middle and an end and to get it all right. It's incredibly difficult and it's incredibly hard work. But if you enjoy doing it, it's a kind of pleasurable hard work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
This is what you're here for at the moment, isn't it, Anna? There's not a book that you're selling or anything.
No.
It's more a campaign that you kind of, or an awareness campaign, if I can call it that, to try. Is that appropriate? Is it inappropriate?
Oh, finish your sentence. This is good.
Well, just to try to get, to impress upon people the importance of reading and the importance of writing in and of itself.
Mm. The best way that we have of understanding what it's like to be another human being is by reading. You know, you don't get the interior monologue of what it's like to be someone else from a film. Because it's visual.
I think that's wonderful. You know, I have a daughter and she's just published her first book. She's self-published and she does a workshop at her house in Los Angeles 3 times a week. And that's what she does. She has 10 or 12 women at this workshop. She teaches them to use their imagination and to, you know, discover what they want to do in life by writing.
Does it matter what you read? Does it matter what you write? Or is it simply the process of reading and writing itself, whatever it is that you are?
Well, we are surrounded with literary snobs. I know that better than anyone. And it kind of annoys them that I have published and had so many books out there.
Did you console yourself in this pile of half a billion books.
I don't console myself because it doesn't bother me.
Have you ever?
I like the people that come to me on Twitter. I'm Jackie J. Collins on Twitter.
Yes.
And say to me,
oh, there's another thousand. Yes.
Oh, I just read this or I just read that and I love this and this is so, you know, you get a fantastic feedback from social media. Fantastic.
So this is what's interesting though. What matters? What is it that makes writing and reading important and worthwhile? Is it the numbers of people who are moved by it? Is it that anybody is moved by it? Is it something intrinsic to the words that are on the page? Or is it all of that?
I write for myself. It's lovely that people read me, but I write for my own pleasure. And I think if it was 100 years ago, I'd be sitting around that campfire and saying, let me tell you a story.
I think also today, in the sort of blithering mess that is the Twitter sphere and the internet, where anybody with a computer and 10 fingers is a writer, it is important what you read, and it does make a big difference. And I think initially people should obviously, as we do, teach our children, read for pleasure, and generally people should read for pleasure, but you should read a wide range of things. So people, you know, the purpose of writing is at once a kind of delight, but it's also to expand your mind, even if you don't know you're having your mind expanded. Mm. And then it has a political importance as well. Mm. So the internet has no authors necessarily. Mm. It has no beginnings, middles and ends. And, you know, you need an author with authority to be able to put the world together for you. The truism is to speak truth to power. So there's a political purpose and then there's a personal purpose.
With the process of writing and the relationship that has with technology, I find interesting because both of you write books. This mm-hmm. is what you do. They're big things. They take a lot of work. You have to get them through editors and publishers and so on. Technology's changing that. So now people are writing probably more than they ever have, but they're doing it in the form of tweets or whatever. Is that a different thing?
Well, I think it's very different. I mean, you know, tweets are like, 140 characters? Mm. So that's just kind of a fun thing to do. It gets people thinking, though. But I think writing, everybody wants to do it. And so we've got so many bloggers now and they all think they're writers and, you know, so on and so forth.
So would you say that they're not? Do you think that they're...
I think they're writers in their own particular way, yeah. But I don't think everybody is capable of writing a book. When you see a celebrity, for instance, who has an autobiography and they pretend they've written it, but they've had a ghostwriter write it.
Yes.
And then they go, I'm a writer, you know, I'm a New York Times best-selling writer and now I'm going to write a novel. Like, it's so easy, and it's so interesting because they could have a huge bestseller with the autobiography, and then they write the novel, and it fails dismally.
Yes.
It happens every time.
Yeah.
It's kind of amusing to watch.
So they're different sorts of skill sets.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
It's important to recognize that.
You have to know what you're doing.
Sorry, I don't mean to keep getting stuck on the half a billion copies, but have you done fun calculations like... If you put all of those half a billion copies together, whether it reached the moon or... Like, have you done those sorts
No, I haven't done those sort of things, but I do know that they pirated me in China about 15 years ago and that they sold 1 million copies in 2 days and then they sent the secret police out to seize the books because I was corrupting Chinese youth and then they couldn't find any books because they were all sold out and then they threatened, and I don't know whether they did or not, to execute the publishers.
Really?
And I thought, go ahead, I didn't get anything out of this.
Well, Australia didn't go that far. I know you got banned here.
No, I was banned in Australia with The World is Full of Married Men, which was my first book.
Was that when in the 60s? It was 68 or something?
1968, yeah.
Which I'm sure did wonders for the book.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was number one within 10 days. Well, somebody in England took a half page in an English newspaper and they said, this is the most shocking book I've ever read because it took the double standard and it put it on its head.
Right. So this idea of sexual equality that you...
I write very much about sexual equality in a fun way.
Mm. Steamy way.
Fun, steamy.
Steamy is the word.
Yeah, well, there's something for everybody in all my books. You know, I write black, white, old, young, sexual orientation. I write for everybody. So when they pick up one of my books, they can find something that is going to interest them.
If you're wondering who it is that writes all these incredibly fun things, it's Jackie Collins, and she's back with another book, Confessions of a Wild Child. It's about a character called Lucky that has appeared in, what is it, 8 books now or something like that?
Yeah, and too many series, yeah.
Just unbelievable. She just keeps appearing. And,
she keeps appearing because they keep on wanting her, and I love writing her. She's like a James Bond for women. She does all the things we would like to do, but we don't quite have the stones to do it, and she does it for us.
Yeah, that's right. There's that element of sort of aspirational fantasy.
Yes,
world, isn't
exactly.
It?
Yeah.
Anna Funder is our other guest. Her most recent book is All That I Am. She's not here in that capacity, though. She just wants us to read and write stuff. Did you ever get entranced by Lucky?
I have to admit, I don't know Lucky.
Oh, really?
Sorry to say.
Lucky is like...
I'm missing out.
So how would you describe... Like, she's the wild child. She's the bad... But certainly here, she's trying to break all the rules. And this is Lucky as a 15-year-old, which she appears a lot older in the other... What is it? How many did we say? Eight books. What I find interesting about this story, though, is that I think this is entirely an autobiographical story. Because...
Oh, you're very smart.
You mentioned.
Yes.
And I know that's kind of an obvious question to ask of any author about any book. But in this case, come on.
I mean, you're right. I'm not going to deny it. There's a lot of me in Lucky when she was a teenager.
So when you were 15.
We all go back to our teenage years, you know.
Yes, but not all of our teenage years involve having affairs with celebrities and throwing our school uniforms in the Thames after being expelled, do they?
Well, everybody has their own particular life.
No, it's not a particular life. This is a rip-roaring life. You have to take it through.
Yeah, it's kind of rip-roaring.
Did you have any idea at that time that this was a bizarre way to be living by most people's standards?
No, it's totally normal to me. You know, I like to give people a look into a different kind of world, perhaps that they don't live in. Mm. You know, my father was a theatrical agent in London, so I grew up with famous people moving through our house all the time, you know, singers and dancers and movie stars and stuff like that. Mm. And so I was never in awe of famous people. So when I was very young, I started to write about them. And I always feel in Los Angeles that I'm like an anthropologist crawling through the jungles of Hollywood, watching what's going on, and then writing about it and changing the names to protect the not so innocent.
One day you've got to do an unredacted version.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, she'd release all your books again, sell another 500 million copies.
Thank you.
With just all unredacted. Redacted with the names that are really there.
I know.
That do you keep a separate diary?
Black box. I keep a journal, do you?
Yeah, but I don't think mine would be nearly as interesting as yours.
Could be.
No way.
You live in New York, and it'd be a little more underground, I reckon, your diary. What's interesting, though, is that you talk about this inner monologue that you're trying to, or that you are getting into someone's head when you read something that they've written. But at the same time, whenever you're writing fiction, you're writing a vast range of characters that cannot possibly be the author. So you, as authors, have to get inside other people's heads, real or otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. That's part of the act of the imagination, isn't it, Jackie?
Yeah, and it's part of the fun, too. Mm. I mean, right now I'm writing a new book called The Sant'Angelos. Once again,
another
Lucky.
Didn't you say a couple of Lucky books ago that was it, no more Lucky?
No, I didn't. Somebody said it, a journalist said it, and then, of course, everybody caught on to that, and I said, no, I never said that.
So this isn't a broken promise. You never made the pledge.
No, because she has children now, Lucky, and, you know, she has Bobby Stanilopoulos Sant'Angelo, the Greek shipping billionaire's son, and she has a daughter who's 18, so they're fantastic new characters in the book. Anyway, right now I'm writing a Colombian drug lord, and I researched him very carefully. But I've actually met people like that. When I meet somebody, I feel that I know much more about them than I really should, and then I can capture them.
Well, because of a gift you have or because you...
I think it's a gift I was given,
So you just pick up on things about people that they...
Yeah.
Wow. This is starting to make me very uncomfortable.
And in what capacity have you met a Colombian drug lord?
Well, it was actually in Acapulco. And some friends of mine were friends with him, and he wouldn't admit that he was that, but that's what he was. And I wrote about him actually in a previous book. But he was such a character. You know, he had a heliport in his garden. Well, it wasn't exactly a garden. It was more, you know, right on the sea. And he would treat his daughter, who was like 16, and all her friends as though he was their lover. He would grab them all. There would be roasted pigs for lunch, and the housekeeper, he would grab her and say, "She loves me so much." And you could see the woman wanted to stab him in the heart.
Yeah.
And so he was such a character, and he was so great to write about, and then he vanished.
Must be quite cathartic to be able to do that, you know.
It was. I could never go back to Acapulco after that.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Do you know anyone in the Stasi, Anna?
Sure I do. Lots of them.
Did you feel the same thing, where you could get behind the front that was being given to you?
Yeah, I did, and they didn't like it. And when Stasiland was done and before it was published, I sent each chapter about each of those Stasi men and also about the four really brave people I was most interested in. But I sent the chapters to them for comment for two reasons. I didn't want to get anything wrong about their lives, but also I kind of wanted to have a heads up about how angry they were going to be and what they were going to do to me. Mm. I heard nothing except for some complaints from one of the Stasi men, who was like a sort of very, very evil Bert Newton, if you can imagine. That's very hard to imagine.
That is... Jackie's looking at us with bewilderment.
Evil Bert Newton?
Yeah.
I know who Bert Newton is. Yeah, he used to be with Don Lane, didn't he?
Exactly.
On television.
I just mean it like a really phenomenal television figure, but he was really wicked.
Okay.
And he was a bit cranky. I mean, the Stasi did not sue me afterwards. Mm. And
wow.
And they wanted part of the book redacted, and it was the part where I talked about what they were doing after the fall of the Berlin Wall in the 90s in Free Unified Berlin to harass the citizens' rights activists. So they were cutting people's brake leads, taking their children from school and detaining them for a couple of hours, delivering pornography to somebody's wife who didn't order, you know, all of these things. And they wanted that taken out. It was absolutely true. And they had it taken out, and they won that court. Well, actually, my then publisher didn't defend it properly. And now in the new editions, I've asked that that go back in and be blacked out so that the page actually looks like a Stasi file, and so that it's evident that this is due to Stasi action after the fall of the wall.
That is such a great idea.
Mm. Yeah. So that's the new German edition. So, and then it says, you know, this is a result of a Stasi court case. When I got the news by email years ago in Sydney, I was working in the attic of my house. This email comes in saying you're being sued by the Stasi. And I thought, oh, God. And it really took me out of my headspace. You know, it was just like, it doesn't take much, but like being sued by the Stasi.
You might have sold half a billion books. Wow. Have you got an email like that, Jackie?
You've got a thing about that, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I do. I'm still trying to get over it.
And I went downstairs. I thought, I really need a cup of tea. So I went downstairs and I turned on the tap in my house in Sydney and no water came out. And I just had this flash of kind of hysterical paranoia thinking, oh my God, they've reached out to the other end of the earth and they've had my water cut off. No. You know, they're going to thirst me out of my situation. And of course, in typical style, I just, you know, missed a council notice and they turned off the taps. But my husband was in Buenos Aires last week and I was looking at a little bit around what happened under their junta, and I talk about this in Stasiland as well. So those Stasi men were very much the functionaries. They were very grey. They did a lot of evil, but they did it by committee. Mm. Whereas in Latin America, you know, they had twice weekly flights where they were drugging people and taking them up and dumping them in the river. I mean, it was much, much more red-blooded, you know?
I think you guys...
culturally different.
If you guys compared notes... The next Jackie Collins novel could be unbelievable.
I want to read your journal, so I could do your journal. And you can do it with my Stasi
horror.
Well,
I really want to read your books because I'm reading a book now called A House in the Sky. I don't know if you've heard about it, about this young woman that was like a traveler. She wanted to backpack all over the world, and finally she was kidnapped in Somalia. Mm. And it's fascinating to read it. Really fascinating. So I love different kinds of books too. I mean, I usually like to read thrillers, but I like real life stories that are so interesting, and yours sounds marvelous.
Well, I think the world is getting more and more bizarre. I mean, it's getting to be, Goethe said, we don't have the imagination for reality. And I'm finding my imagination is kind of taxed at the moment. When you think about Edward Snowden, say, who informs us that we are being spied on, all our emails are being read, you know, they have access to our phone calls. Already Google, which is passing this information to the government, knows what we buy, who our friends are, and so on and so forth. So it's total surveillance. The Stasi are just sitting there happy as anything. Like, their wildest dreams have come true because it's possible to have everybody under surveillance. And the person who brings this to our attention goes to Russia, where they're busy locking up and sometimes killing journalists and people who do this. I mean, reality outstrips... Possibly not what you could make up, Jackie, but certainly what I can
said I have to tone my fiction down.
Yeah.
I cannot write the real truth,
even
about Hollywood and celebrities and people like that. Mm. Even though I don't write actual people, I write fictional characters. I have to tone them down.
Yes, as we've learned, this is basically a diary. We know that now.
But that's exactly my experience as well. So I wanted to write Stasiland years ago as a novel, but it was also because if you're writing a novel, you have to make it believable. And it was not believable that one in six people were informing other people. And it wasn't believable the incredible courage of the people who spoke out either. Yeah. So that had to be nonfiction. So you could do your incredible Hollywood expose as nonfiction and change your name. And
it works in a way that it doesn't.
And then the novels are toned down.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. The latest novel of Jackie Collins that we're talking about is Confessions of a Wild Child, Lucky, the Early Years. If you ever wondered what made Lucky the woman that she became in eight books, then now you can find out what she was like when she was 15. And turns out she's a lot like Jackie Collins was when she was 15. It's been a joy having both of you in the
drawing room. Being in your living room. And it went so quickly. But I still want to know how many books you've sold.
The news is coming. Sorry, I'm going to have to...
Thank you, Walid.
Thank you so much.